Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation. Recorded live during the Spring 2020 Wednesday webinar series.
We'll turn the time now over to Jenny Georgia and her class on strategies, what to do when they are stuck.
Well, welcome everyone. I'm excited to teach this class. I have been teaching classes on math at LDSHE since 2009, I think. And I told Lisa when I was asked to do this, and I'm like, I've taught everything I can possibly think of about math. Just go back to the audio library and listen to my old presentations and download the old handouts. But as life moves on, you learn more and you deal with different things. And I found as this year went on that I did have actually a lot more new experiences and different things to share about math and math education in your home. So I hope this will be a benefit to you. And we'll get started. As we go through this presentation, I hope that you'll have a prayer in your heart as far as what needs to happen in your home to be able to improve the math education. And if you have a specific concern or a child that is struggling, I hope that it might not be something that I actually say, but it's you're directing your spirit toward that child and has asking for help, that you can be inspired with some changes and some improvements that you can make to help that child along his math journey. So I hope you printed off the handout. I'm not going to cover everything that I put on the handout. I decided I had way too much stuff. So the handout is kind of like a supplement. It does go along a bit, you know, but you can certainly make notes, circle things on there that you feel like might be of use to you. It's a lot of information, so please don't feel overwhelmed. Just take from it what you need for your own home. Okay, so math education really has three different components. By the way, I chose this space presentation, the PowerPoint, because it feels like a lot of times you're trying to pull your child out of space. I had children, my first group of kids, I have basically two sets of kids. And my first group, I had a lot more like just spacing off kind of stuff with math. And with this one, it's a lot more anxiety meltdown kind of stuff. So, but the space theme is definitely part of what you're doing with math. Anyway, so the first thing is emotion. And that emotion is difficult to deal with in a good way in your math education. If there's a lot of emotion, you're not going to be able to learn. You need to be calm and alert to learn math. The second one is cognition. This is just simple brain development. And then you need to have the, be adding in the thinking skills as you're going along. So some of that is nature and some of it is nurture. And the knowledge part, the third component of math education is number sense, operation sense, memorized facts, things that just are stored away in your memory. So that all three of those things are important. And all three of them can malfunction in your spaceship. So you you can have big issues with all of them, like the emotional, if you're in a high adrenaline state from fear, anxiety, you simply cannot learn. The cognitive, you need to be able to apply the logic that you've gained from one set of math concepts to a new set of math concepts. And sometimes that transfer of knowledge from one situation to another is very difficult for some kids. And the third portion that can malfunction is just you have to have the knowledge built in that slowly, layer upon layer, those go adding, you know, as you're going along with your life. And if the knowledge is not being retained, the knowledge is kind of like the nails. The cognition is the hammer that's pounding in the nails to build something, and the knowledge is the nails. You have to have those nails. And if the nails are falling out all the time, you know, because of forgetting, et cetera, that's not going to work either. So that's kind of the first job, I think, is to figure out what is malfunctioning. And it can be all three. It easily could be all three. But so for some kids, it's not. I've known kids where it is not all three for sure. It is just a specific one. Here's how I believe if math is a fight at your house all the time, this is kind of what it looks like. You need to dissect this. And it feels like to me that if your child can do math in a non-math situation, like in not in math class, when it doesn't look like math, if they can do math when it doesn't look like math, like cooking, doubling recipes or something, or playing a game where there's math involved, if they can do math fairly well in those situations, then they can't do math when it's math time, then it's a math anxiety problem. If a child can do math when they're just following the memorized steps of an algorithm or procedure that they've done, but if you change up any of the components of the math problem, if they're changed up at all, then the child cannot figure out what to do at all, then it's a cognition problem. And if the problem looks more like the child is doing fine when you're sitting with them one day doing math, and then the next day it comes back and it's like that lesson never occurred, wasn't retained at all, then it's a knowledge problem. So that's kind of a way to frame that your child could have any one of these three problems or all of them. Okay, so let's focus first on emotion. Emotion at my house looks like math anxiety or just going into a math trance, like I've already mentioned. I like the phrase, whether you believe you can or believe you can't, you're right. That is really, it's really true that you have to have a belief in yourself. You have to feel calm when you sit down to do a thing that you actually can do it. And if you believe you can't, especially with this type of thing, you can't. We need to sometimes work on reframing this with kids. But many people have developed math anxiety through their school years, even some homeschoolers. Who haven't experienced a lot of high-stress math situations will have developed a lot of math anxiety. But when the emotions kick in, that thinking is short-circuited, you know, that fight and flight, the adrenaline, learning stops once the math anxiety starts. At that point, if you are trying to get them to understand something, back away from the math because it's not going to work. It's just going to make it worse. Several different forms of math anxiety that are pretty frequent. There's just avoidance, you know, the resistance. And then the one I get sometimes at my house is just trying to race through it, not worrying what the answers you're putting down or whatever. You're just trying to race through it and get to the end and just be done with it. Now, it is uncomfortable not knowing something. We all reach for our smartphones as soon as we have a question we don't know the answer to. That's getting worse and worse in our society, I feel like. And we need to model in our adult lives and with our children, help them understand that it's okay not to know something. It's okay to sit with the feeling of not knowing something and learn to be comfortable with that and not try to race through it or panic when you have a feeling that you don't know something. It's kind of like we all just want to turn to the last page of the book to find out how it ends. But that is really skipping around the most important part of math, because math is not about the answers. It is about the thinking process that delivers us to correct truth. It's a search for truth, but it's a search, and we can't just jump to the end. That won't help us in the long run. I've even worked with some kids who will just fire off a bunch of guesses at me really fast and try to just watch me to see if I can kind of, if I'm going to indicate somehow that one of them is right or wrong or whatever. So uncomfortable with not knowing how to do the problem that they just want to skip around the thinking and just be done with it, right? I think the first step in this is when we feel like our child might have a math anxiety problem, we need to identify the emotion and we need to help the child process it. This is something, you know, you're just going to be the emotion coach. We're going to talk about it. What is exactly the problem with the you know, with the behavioral things that we see sometimes when it was time to do math, is it fear? If it's fear, fear of what? Is it fear of humiliation? Because we're not in public school anymore, so who's going to be humiliating? But sometimes even there's some sibling stuff that happens. Oh, that would never happen at my house. No, where kids are going to kind of pressure each other or even make fun of each other when they're, you know, ahead or behind. And of course, that stems from the anxiety that own child has that's launching those bombs at the other child. Sometimes the fear is having to sit there and work for a long time at a thing. And they just don't want to, you know, they might miss out on something fun. Is it simply just dislike of math because they've been told so many times that they are not, or they've told themselves that they're not good at math, and now I have to do math and it just feels yucky and horrible. So we need to acknowledge the child's feelings and talk about these emotions and have some respect for the emotion and remember when we were kids and we didn't feel that great about doing math, right? We try to reframe their anxiety and their feelings instead of an I hate math, I'm bad at math, into math is challenging, but if I persist, I can make progress. Math is a cool puzzle, that type of thing. The second big thing here is brain health. We deal a lot with some brain issues at my house, and it certainly makes a big difference if the child has slept well, if they are well fed, if they have just been exercising, if they've had some positive things going on in the morning. We sit down to do math, it goes so much better than if we have had not good things going on in the morning. So those are the two biggest things I would be: identify the emotion, talk through it, and make sure the brain health is okay. There can be all kinds of, we're not going to get into these issues, but all kinds of things that put you in a brain fog, like this morning allergy medication can put me in a brain fog and I'm just not as sharp or whatever, you know? So that's a thing. So how do we go about healing the math anxiety and or awakening this mathtronaut? I like the word mathtronaut, who is off drifting in space. There's a lot of things we can do. The first one is just touch. Put your hand on their shoulder, grab their hand, make some eye contact. If they're starting to lose it, going on the floor, this never happens at my house again, then some guided breathing. Okay, let's do 2 deep breaths. Let's do 4 deep breaths. Go slower, slower, you know. Blow out the fires on your thumbs is one that we do sometimes. And again, in that situation, it's not about the math anymore. It's about we're not going to have a positive experience with math today. Let's not have a negative experience with math, because all those negatives add up. And I put music on here. I think playing some music in the background, supposedly Handel's Water Music is supposed to have been written to stimulate the math part of the brain. I've played that from time to time. I have one child who was kind of one of these mathtronaut spacing off kind of kids, and that child would go when that child got old enough to do math in a bedroom and could turn on the rock music, that the math, the time it would take to do the big, ugly, advanced math, Saxon math problem set went from like an hour and a half down to like 45 minutes. It, like half the time when this child could listen to rock music. And so that stimulated the brain. So the other thing is we want to not just decrease the negative, we want to increase the positive feelings that we have about math. I love a couple, you know, we play games a lot here. Prime Climb is one the kids go to a lot. We've really enjoyed that one. It has a lot of interesting math concepts. It's factors and primes and stuff. Frog Pond Fractions is for the littler kids. We play a lot. This 10-pair game, some of the games on here are on my website, Vision Academy Publishing. You can just download them and print them off. This 10-pair game is a fun one. This one is Monopoly. No, I think this is Life Money. Monopoly Money. Anyway, any game that has multiplication, addition things in it is fantastic. There's a lot of fraction games you can play. This one is building a box out of different fractions, seeing which fractions go together. What's in a Number card game that's all about factors. This one is on my website as well. And then just math storybooks. There's a lot of really fun ones out there. The Circumference series, Greg Tang. Just look at my old handouts that are on the LDSA GIDI library for a list of math books that are fun. So we're just like going for try to create a positive math attitude in our home. And so one thing again, with the kids who are like, how long is this going to, oh no, mom started talking to me about a thing. Now I can't race through it. So one thing you can do is set a timer and say, okay, we're going to do math for, you know, whatever is age appropriate. We're going to do math for 15 minutes. However much, if we can actually focus and actually, you know, do some real math, and don't worry about how many pages you can, whatever it is, you know, just let's do some really good math thinking, talking about it, working with manipulatives, and have that timer set when the timer beeps so they know it won't go on forever. That would decrease the anxiety level there. Positive language, showing interest yourself in what they're doing and showing interest on your own, reading some of the, in the handout, I've got lots of books that have been phenomenally life-changing to my math, my perspective on math. So read some of those and talk about to the kids about the things that you're learning. Occasional rewards are good, and just don't become reliant on them. And with the older kids, just try to check in with them. Once my kids got into high school, my older set, I really was not that involved in their math, but just checking in with them, seeing how it's going, pats on the back, that type of a thing. So they know that you're interested, and then just doing that more like math enrichment stuff with them, watching some interesting videos, playing games and things. But I was not involved and don't plan on being involved in the day-to-day moment-to-moment math with older children. That's just not realistic. Okay, so probably the biggest thing with this to increase the positives is to praise the efforts and not the results. And I feel like a lot of kids feel like they're a failure because they don't very frequently get, you know, all of their math right, or even a fraction of it right the first time they try anyway. We go back and revisit things, and when they're, you know, don't do it yet. Right. It will get correct at the end, but it's the process, right? But still, it's praising the efforts. You worked really hard on this. I saw you doing some really good math thinking today. I'm so proud of you. That type of language with them is really huge. Okay. The other kind of big picture of this is attention problems. I'm not going to get into this, but I like this. This feels like a day in the mind of one of my children, particularly, just squirrel, 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 all over the place, right? You have to address the hyperactivity issue however you see fit and with whatever resources you need to. But one thing that sometimes is helpful is to do school in the evenings instead of in the mornings. They have too much energy. Some of these kids have too much energy in the mornings. It's overwhelming, and they can't slow down until when it's getting close to bedtime, right? Okay. So again, if there's attention issues, brain health, and then make the lessons really short and really frequent. So that's where the slow drip method comes in. That is the beauty of our homeschooling, is that all throughout the day, whenever something pops up that the kids need to do some math, or there's some kind of a thing that's a math opportunity, I take it with them. I mean, not every day, and I'm not perfect, and please don't put me on a pedestal, but I try to say, hey guys, there's a thing. And you were just doing this I know that you were doing this in your math book recently. See how this works in, in black, whatever. So short, frequent lessons and good brain health if you have attention problems in your child. Now, and with this one, you know your child like no public school teacher could. And that's, again, the beauty of homeschooling, is that you've been with this kid all along. You know what he knows and what he doesn't know. And sometimes we're like, I can't teach my child math. They just have to go to public school or some other situation. Well, no, you can. I have a testimony that you can. You may need to up your own game and read a lot of things and turn yourself into a more person who is better at understanding what math education looks like. But you can do it. And focusing on improving the emotional state of your child, improving the attention state of your child, will bless them in all aspects of their life, in all areas of their life. right. The next big component of math education is the thinking skills. And thinking is when we're introducing a new concept, right? A lot of people go straight to, here's a fact, let's start memorizing the facts or algorithms, procedures, et cetera. Let's just memorize those things. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is math is composed of ideas. They're big ideas. We need to understand how the idea works in the real world before we show how it works with symbols on paper. And that is huge. We must build up our idea of numbers in the real world before we can use them in our minds. Thinking happens when we have time to do this struggle. Thinking is work. Your brain is not a muscle, but it acts a lot like a muscle. It takes up 1/3 of the blood flow. The energy of your body is going straight to your brain and used there. And your brain gets physically tired. It accumulates, I don't get into the neurological stuff, but your brain gets tired. And thinking is work. So this math, the thinking, we have to have the time to do this. We have to have a reason to do this. And we have to have a desire to do the thinking. All three of those things need to be there. Well, I guess there's really one more, time/opportunity/, it has to be like the environment has to be good with supplemental resources and with calm, quiet, hopefully, to be able to do some good thinking. So a long time ago, I had read some Jean Piaget, and he believed that that there are three basic stages to learning a thing. The first is the concrete stage, then there's the mental image stage, and there's the that I have to bring it in every time, because if our child is trying to do math, higher level math in the abstract stage, and their rocket ship is crashing, you need to find a way to bring it back into the mental image stage, and from there even into the concrete stage. And I do this every single day with my kids, every day. This is what we do. Many people have some level of difficulty processing symbols. When they're shown a bunch of symbols that represent quantities and dimensions, their brain just freezes up. And when we use our hands to touch 3D objects, it improves comprehension of math in several ways. So these math manipulatives are just key. You can show practically everything in math, well, beyond like college level, up to like college level math, and I'm sure you probably could find ways, but yeah, with manipulatives. So some of the beauties of manipulatives are that these physical objects, they will pique the interest, right? They bring in some fun factor. Everyone loves to play with blocks. Everyone loves to play with a little balance beam. The brain must be awake and engaged to learn. And studies have shown that when children are presented with a puzzle that is to solve, that is a bit above what their age group should be able to do, if it's presented with kind of a fun factor, or even like a playful voice or a story, or just objects, there's some kind of a fun factor. Children's can function, their logic skills function above what their age group would be typically able to do if there's a little bit of a fun factor in it. Reasoning rods are the ones that we get out. They're out right now. They're on the floor. They're almost always out. They are rods that show for example, this picture here I wrote, this is one picture that contains many math facts, right? There's the three rods are the green ones, and the nine rod is the blue one, and you put them in and it shows all of these different math facts here. So when we're using Cuisenaire rods, one thing that a lot of people don't understand is that a lot of your memory function comes through your cerebellum, which is the part of your brain that coordinates muscle movements, and it also stores a lot of memory. Musicians have larger cerebellums than most of us because they're using so much of their muscle coordination, and their muscle memory is stored there. Your muscle memory can prompt your more like executive functioning type memory to be able to have fact recall. If you have played with those, if you have built it with your hands, you'll be able to come up with that much more easy. And there's the phrase, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand. Also, be ye doers of the word, right? Be ye doers of the word. So this one is base 10 blocks. Our base 10, our decimal system is a bit, it is abstract, and it takes kids a while to figure out the place value system, right? And so having base 10 blocks, these are on my website actually, is a way to help them to bring that from the abstract into the mental image, into the concrete. And when they build them, when they play with these within the concrete, in the real world, they'll be building up mental image so that they can move things around, break things apart, put things together in their mind, and eventually they won't even need that image anymore. It will just be automatic. It will be in the abstract zone. So these 10 blocks are great. So we're always going to pull things back from abstract into mental image and concrete when we need to. Sometimes if concrete is not enough, especially if there's the tension issues there, the kids need something even more than concrete. And I've been calling it vibrant concrete lately, where we will, go to the kitchen and get a sandwich and we'll cut the sandwich. My kids are very motivated by food. And so anything where they're like fractions with sandwiches, add, addition, subtraction, food, you know, anything related to food, it might be toys like measuring a Hot Wheels track, how long or how fast the car can go. We did a problem recently figuring out distance and of travel time, and we used Hot Wheels tracks in cars because they were more vibrant than just our regular Cuisinart rods and things. So that's a fun one. All right, attribute blocks are a fun thing that we have at our house. I haven't, I just put this picture in here because I was reading in John Holt, I don't know if you have read John Holt's classic book, How Children Learn. He talks about an anecdote of where they were just in the 70s, I believe, developing attribute blocks. And I don't know if you're familiar with these. It's a method of helping kids think about categorizing and sorting and making sets like Venn diagrams and things, right? And so he told this anecdote in his book that I thought would be fun to pass on. He says that the people who develop these attribute blocks, they develop them, this is quote, by having small groups of young children, mostly five-year-olds, come and work with them. That is, play various games, do puzzles, and solve problems. They found a very interesting thing about the way children react to these materials. If when a child came in for the first time, they tried to get him to work right away, to play some of their games and solve some of their problems, puzzles, they got nowhere. The child would try to do what he was asked, but without joy or interest. But if at first they let the child alone for a while, let him play with the materials in his own way, they got very different results. At first, the children would work with the pieces of wood in a fantasy. Some pieces would be mommies and daddies, some children or houses and cars or big and little animals. Then the children would make various kinds of patterns, buildings, and constructions out of the pieces of wood. When, through such play and fantasy, the children had taken these materials into their minds, mentally swallowed and digested them, so to speak, they were then ready and willing to play very complicated games that in more organized and business-like situations had left other children completely baffled. So again, the play aspect is huge. He says this proved to be consistently true. Play leads to flexibility in thinking about math, and we're, when you're trying to strengthen the cognitive part of the math aspects, this is one you've got to bring in some play. If you create, and you want to have that child actually become a creator in math, you want to say, here's a thing, I'm doing this thing. Now you make up a problem. Try to stump mommy. You make up her problem and try to see if I can solve it. If you let the child become a creator, that's huge in their minds. So we're going from mental flexibility through play. I also highly recommend that you look into different number systems and different number writing systems, and also different base systems like the base 20 system, the base 60 system that were used throughout history. It put things in perspective, and it helps the child pull back from there's only one way of doing math. That's a dangerous attitude. It's convenient for children who have strong memory but weak cognition to just think about there's just one way of doing math. But in the long run, it will hurt you. You can't do higher level math without having that cognition piece being really strong. So much of what we learn in math classes is just there are arbitrary conventions that we have, you know, the ways that we do it in the modern 21st century that are not even true from country to country, much less they're human conventions. And so if we pull back from that, it's really helpful. I've been looking into some Vedic math stuff lately. It's super interesting, and I'm planning on showing that to my kids if I can find one that's more age appropriate for them. So Jamie York is a Waldorf math instructor, and I really have been liking his things, Making Math Meaningful series that he has. It's a full curriculum, but he deals with teaching math the way that they do in the Waldorf schools. And he got a couple of quotes from his Making Math Meaningful book. Students are often given the impression that there is only one way to do a math problem, that math is rigid and inflexible. We need to instead look for opportunities to show that there are multiple ways to solving a math problem and elicit from our students their different ideas when we're doing a calculation or solving a problem. So help the kids become creators in math. And he says also, imagination is the ground from which knowledge springs. There's also an Einstein quote along those lines that his most important thing that he for his math discoveries was not the knowledge part of it, it was the imagination part of it. Okay, moving along. Fractions are a major stumbling block for many kids. They're not numbers in themselves, it's a relationship between two numbers. And some kids hyper focus on, you know, the top number or the bottom number, and they don't see that it's meaningless without considering both number. Both numbers must be held in the mind at one time to understand the concept. And this is a process that develops. It's not really usually present in younger children, younger than 8 or so. In fact, Jean Piaget believed that young children lack the ability to maintain and coordinate attention toward two dimensions at once, towards width and depth, height, whatever, two different numbers, you know, holding those together in your mind at the same time, seeing how they relate to each other. That's not a thing that young children can typically do. So like things like speed, volume, density, fractions, ratios, this ability can be slow to develop. Logic skills don't mature much. You know, it's typically around age 8. But children are familiar with things like halves and stuff from their everyday life. And so I feel like it's actually helpful to start talking about halves and fourths, and with their physical fraction rods and things, just separating them. I focus on the denominator, and we call it the namer. What's the name of this piece? This piece is a third. This piece is a eighth, you know, an eighth. That helps kids start thinking about this and then seeing it written, but not worrying about the numerator yet when they're young. Just having ways of playing with that a little bit and starting to think about it is good. The next major stumbling block in math is algebra. I once taught a math class, and then I had someone come up to me afterward and say that she was fine with math as long as they used numbers. When they started using letters in her math, she never understood it again, and she still didn't understand anything about math. And I was kind of like, that is so sad, because it's actually not that confusing. And in the Miquon Math Lab program that we use in our first early, you know, our early grades, she introduces it, Lori Rasmussen, the author, introduces algebra through simply different shaped frames. I don't know how well you can see this slide, but these are prime factorizations, and you have the same number in a circle, and then if there's a square, you can put a different number. So this is like X's and Y's and things in algebra. This other problem on the other side also has algebraic components to it. So there's ways of introducing algebra not algebra itself, but the logic that's behind algebra, if that's kind of built in as they're younger and they kind of grow up with it, it's not a big shocker. None of my older kids were ever, they all went through Mequon Math Lab and never had, you know, it was just was not an issue when they started doing formal algebra. This is an app that we like a lot, Dragonbox. The Dragonbox people have a lot of really great apps. This is Dragonbox Algebra, and they have an algebra game that starts with for age 5-year-olds. And I think it's 5 to 12, and there's one for older kids too. But it's really been helpful in just kind of learning the logic behind behind math. There's also algebra manipulatives that can be used. Some kids just don't need this at that level, but I know I have a couple that are definitely going to coming up. And so algebra manipulatives are ways of modeling, making physical the nebulous components. And what this set, the yellow blocks are the numbers, and then the blue blocks, like this would be a five, is the same length as the five rod in like Cuisenaire rods, but the X's and the Y's and things that you see here, they're like kind of halfway between like a 7 and an 8 or 2/3 of the way. So you're not supposed to be able to measure exactly, but you're supposed to, they're there so that you can think about doing the algebra. There's a video that I was hoping we could show right about now. If I have Lisa take over and show this video, let's see if that will work. I put the link to the YouTube in PowerPoint, and the PowerPoint will go up. I can put it up today on the audio library, so you can go back and watch that. It was just a lady working through the three different steps of math, you know, concrete, abstract, and mental image and abstract with algebra. So thought it was interesting. but okay, so let's see. I'm going to share my screen again. Okay. If it will come back in a minute. Just a few more tips on cognitive things, how to jumpstart their thinking. Often I will have, if I'm trying to explain something, I will draw a picture and then have them draw a picture of it. If I teach, then I have them teach back to me. If they can rephrase the concept in their own words, I know they have understood it. Now, they may not retain it, but they have at least understood it. And if they can practice it some more, they will. It will keep it going. I'm going to have to escape out of this, I think. I'm not. Let's see here. There we go. Okay. Yes. When young minds are floating in space, give them solid objects to cling to. That's summarizing up that why we use manipulatives, right? Okay. Before I get into this one, there's a fun one that that we use sometimes, which is to try to understand the base 10 system. We say, okay, let's visualize units as primary children. So this is a primary. Each unit is a primary children. The tens are primary classes, and the hundreds is the whole primary in the ward, made up of up to 10 classes, right? So you may add classes to classes. In other words, you can't, if you have, like it's adding tens to tens, right? You can add classes to classes, and you can add kids to kids, but you can't add classes to kids or classes to primaries. You have to convert them. Like maybe if there gets to be more than, if there gets to be 10 or more primary classes, we need a new ward. We need a new primary so that we can fit all of those kids in, right? So kind of making that the decimal system a little bit more visual. But this one right here, a questions to recenter thinking. So the kids are like melting down, they can't figure out a thing, right? Okay, if it's just arithmetic, my favorite question is, how would you do this with apples? If it's more advanced math, can you write an easier version of the same problem? Okay, so those are the two levels, and let's work through what that would look like for arithmetic. Let's say this child is presented with 4 divided by 1/3. And they're like, I have no idea how to do that. Okay. So the question is, how would you do this with apples? Okay, so what does dividing look like with apples? What is dividing? For example, 8 divided by 4 means how many 4s are in 8? So show me that with apples. How would you do that with apples? The kid moves the apples around, right? Now, so there are 2 4s in 8. Now use that same thinking with dividing fractions, because math. So you would say, okay, so if there are 2 4s in 8, when you're saying 8 divided by 4, then how many 1/3s are in 4? Well, there are 3 1/3s in each apple. So with 4 apples, you have 12 1/3s. The answer is 12. 4 divided by 1/3 is 12. So you have to use the same logic, phrase the logic in a way that's easier for the kids to think about, and then have them put the original problem back into the same thinking context, right? Okay, so before I do solidifying knowledge, just make sure as you're thinking about your child's math education, don't let kids get into a too deep of a rut with doing math one certain way before they have a different angle on it. For example, don't let them only see problems running from right to left, like with the sum on the right or the product on the right. Switch it up so that it goes the other way. Leave out, you know, having a missing digit on the things that you're right adding, right? Show the different ways of writing division and fractions. They're the same thing. So show them all the ways of writing that all at the same time and say, you can either write it like this or write it like this, or write this. Like, today we'll focus on this one, but here's the other ones. In other words, don't let them get so deep into a rut of there's only one way of doing this that it totally throws them for a loop when there's a different way. Okay, so that's just a little bit more about that thinking flexibility. Don't let the child, before we move into solidifying knowledge or memorization, don't let the child memorize things that he does not, well, I don't know if you can stop them, but if they don't understand it, they still don't understand what they're doing, don't move to memorizing. Don't have them memorize things they don't understand. Once they have something memorized, the thinking stops, and thinking is the goal, not the actual facts, right? I tell my kids all the time, because I have one who's like, I just put, you know, answers. I don't care about the answers. What we need to care about is the thinking that goes into it. Okay. So some strategies to build knowledge then, if your child is one of these forgetters, he's a forgetter, right? I think really the first thing before you get too deep into solidifying knowledge is that you teach the child, you give the child some experiences with estimation. Estimating is, as I put here, super duper important. I've heard math professors talk about that we should be focusing a lot more on estimating, because estimating, if a child has no estimating skills, hasn't had enough experience in the real world with what that should be, then he's going to come up with an answer to a problem but have no idea whether or not it's in the ballpark of right. So estimating is really important for the solidifying knowledge, because that it allows you to check, to do that little check. I put on your handout my little procedure for going through memorizing arithmetic. I'm not going to cover that all today, just right there. And sometimes I've done it a little bit differently, but that's our current procedure with my 7-year-old, my youngest. I feel like learning 10 pairs is super important. And they need to get those memorized, and we use those all the time. And we start by Cuisenaire rods. We make these 10 pair of staircases with Cuisenaire rods, and then we move to the games and things. Getting those memorized is really important. Learning the factors that are in the numbers is really important. Before you ever try to do multiplication, which you start with repeated addition and move, you know, then move to calling it multiplication. But if they have, you know, played around with factors, you can download these cards from my website and print them off. If they have done that, then they can, then they have more of a sense of what kinds of numbers are, you know, whether that number is a prime number or whether it's, divisible by 3. Those things are already kind of built in, makes the memorization go so much more smoothly. So when the child is to the point of, okay, now we're going to try to memorize the multiplication facts, that's really the After multiplication facts, there's not that much else that needs to be memorized, but this needs to be down cold. So many children really struggle with math later on when they're getting long division stuff. There's so much multiplication in it, but just get them memorized and be done with it. And so, you know, you can go through and just have them fill out multiplication charts and do speed drills. See, okay, yesterday it took you 3 minutes to do that 100 multiplication chart. Can you get it down to 2.5 minutes? You know, you'll give a prize, whatever, you know. This little game is a fun one that I've taken, I think, 15 plastic bins and have written all of the products of the numbers 2 through 12, I think. Just kind of listed them out in order and put those stickers on both sides of the bin. So there's two people sitting across on each opposite sides of those bins, and each child has a set of multiplication flashcards. And you say go, and you start tossing them into the bins, whichever the answer goes, like this 2 times 7, it's in the bin that says 14 on it, right? And so for when I play this with the kids, I'll do all of them myself, but if I'm playing with a younger child, I just give them the set of whether they're working on their twos or whatever. And so they're really working on this and trying to get those in the right bins. And there might be like a cookie, you know, for whoever wins or whatever, or maybe whatever. Some kind of a little prize to make it exciting and really getting those facts down. And then at the end, we pull them out together. We pull them out from each bin together and kind of be like, oh, yep, you did that one right. I did that one right. So you're kind of going through it. One more little review to kind of check and make sure they're not just tossing it in a random bin. That makes sense? So it's a fun game. When I play with my little guy, my seven-year-old, let him use his Cuisinart rods and his rod track. So that he can, if he doesn't know what 2 times 9 is all of a sudden, he can check it and, you know, build that for himself with the rods. That's that game. Before I go to that one, multiplication, a lot of people have multiplication song programs. I have used the Jenny Phillips, The Good and the Beautiful one, the multiplication songs. Not super impressed, actually. It seemed like my kids don't remember the songs because they're not tied in, the numbers are not tied in with the actual song itself. And so they can basically substitute any number into the song. And so it hasn't been that helpful to them. The pictures in the little books, too. It could be, I think it could, it's a good idea, but it needs a little improvement. I've seen, actually the one that I do like is Times Tales. Look that up. Times Tales, they have all the numbers being a different character in a story, and they're the same number as that same character. Like all of the stories have a tree in them. The tree is a 9, and they act together to create little stories to create the product of the math fact. So I do like that one. We do use Multiplication Rock, Schoolhouse Rock videos. We like those, some better than others, but okay. So Jamie York says that by having too much emphasis on procedural skills at an early age, the children will experience math as a collection of blind procedures, likely paving the way for math anxiety and trauma. And so we don't necessarily need to dive in, especially not like the here's a thing, memorize it, now I'm going to test you on it. We don't do that at all. But it's more of a slow drip method of let's do this. This is kind of fun. Okay, let's do this now. Oh, I think you've learned that. And in other words, the child says, what's this? And I say, well, I think you've learned it. You think about it for a while, right? The slow drip method. I guess I wanted to just spend 2 seconds on upper level math memorization. There is a little bit, I was just racking my brains, things that you memorize in upper level math, like order of operations. There's algorithms like the quadratic equation, like the FOIL acronym, first, outside, inside, last. A few little rules like that that are helpful. I mean, Pythagorean theorem. There's the vocabulary. That is a big piece that needs to be memorized in geography, trigonometry, statistics, physics, et cetera. Measurements and conversions can be helpful just to kind of have in the back of your mind. There's not that much memorization that goes into upper level math. It's mostly the cognitive piece that hopefully by the time the child has gotten to that level, they've got their hammer of cognition, they've got their nails, which is their knowledge, and they can move smoothly into it. Now, what if it doesn't go smoothly, right? So dyscalculia is a severe difficulty with math. It's about 5 to 8% of the population apparently suffers with this. So it's often in conjunction with dyslexia. You'll often see both of them. It can be genetic or environmental. It could be the result of some brain trauma. It could be the result of illnesses. You just really don't develop the math parts of your brain that need to be there. And it's likely going to be something that's not ever going to go completely away. So what do we do about it? Well, for one thing, feel blessed that you're a homeschooler because you have those opportunities to do that slow drip method all day, every day, whenever there's an opportunity to be helping them along with their math. But in addition, this is something that I've learned within the past few years, that children that struggle with cognition do need more explicit teaching and repetition. With my older children, I felt like, oh, you just kind of, you know, you set the stage, you lay the foundation, and then they just take off and run because that's what my older children did. And that's not the case necessarily with all children, some that I've tutored as well as my adopted children, require much more explicit teaching and repetition. And they may need something like, okay, you have to help them sort out, for example, if there's a story problem, look for keywords that will trigger what are they multiplying? Are they adding? What are they doing here if these keywords are in it? Some of that will be helpful in the real world. Some of it won't. And you have to go back to what are the goals of this child's, you know, what is this child? Probably not going to be a rocket scientist, and that's okay. We need to work with what we have, but they may need adaptations throughout their whole life. They may need to have, if they're going to be going to college, they may need adaptations and special instruction. They're okay. I feel like that people, though, as time goes on, people are becoming more compassionate and more understanding of neurological diversity than was the case, a few decades ago. And that trend needs to continue, that we don't discount people or say they can't be, valuable in our society if they're having, some severe difficulty with math. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligence is here. I love, because it puts in the framework. And I've talked with my adopted kids about this, how everyone has, we all need to be developing all of these different parts of our, they're all part of our humanity. And we need to be developing all of them. And a well-rounded person will pay attention to all of these things. We usually think about math is the logical part, and the visual spatial processing actually is really important with math as well. But all of these things are beneficial to us and to our long-term progression, you know, even after we're through with this life. And so if you're strong in one of these areas and weak in another, it's okay. Someone else is weak in that area and strong in a different one. So it's okay, that just being compassionate about diversity there. I always have to put this quote in. If you're wondering how can I up my game as a math educator? Richard Skemp's book, The Psychology of Learning Mathematics, is fantastic. But it says, mathematics, like music, needs to be expressed in physical actions. Those are the manipulatives, moving around. Waldorf School does a lot of whole body movements with their math education. Physical actions and human interactions. That's you sitting with your child and talking to them about a thing and, you know, being sensitive to their emotions and getting excited about it. Those two components are huge. Before the symbols of math can evoke the silent patterns of mathematical ideas like music notes, simultaneous relationships like harmonies, and expositions or proofs like melodies. So that is my all-time favorite math quote. And then just one that I ran across recently, Eddie Wu, and it's actually a TED Ed talk. He says, mathematics is a sense, just like sight and touch, that allows us to perceive realities that would otherwise be intangible to us. So that's kind of the big picture of why math is important. to us in this life and in beyond is because it allows us to perceive realities that would otherwise be intangible to us. And that is pretty much my presentation. Oh, look, I'm right on time. That never happens. Okay, Lisa, do we have any questions?
Let me look now. Just a comment right now that this has been awesome, Jennifer. Thank you. If anybody has any questions, please take a moment and put them in the question and answer or in the chat box. I do see both. And Jenny will answer them.
Or try to.
This has been great, Jenny. I wish I had younger kids again so I could go back and play some of these games.
Yeah, it's fun. You just have to adopt more kids like I did, Lisa.
There you go. All right, so we have a question. Let me see if I can read it. It says, you said that there is a time, desire, and reason. So what is a reason for a child?
That's a good question. And the reason would be different for each child, right? If the child sees a need for math, my 9-year-old is obsessed with cooking. And she realizes now, we've talked quite a bit about this, and she's been in the kitchen with those measuring cups, and she realizes that she has to learn fractions to be able to cook. If she's 1.5-ing a recipe, if she's doubling the recipe, and just yesterday it was fun at dinner, she did a little fraction calculation and was like, Mom, I'm getting better at fractions. See, I can cook more. You know, that's her motivation. And so that will be different for each child. And there will be times when it might be not something that is super easy to come up with a reason for, because the whole thing of, you'll never use this again in your life, right? The whole, like, why should I learn algebra, right? Life of Fred is actually really good if you're into that one, at coming up with reasons for, like, the whole point of the books is that Fred figures out how he's going to use this algebra. He's in a bind. He's got to figure out how to get out of it, and he uses math to get out of it. So it might be something in your child's own life, whether or not, you know, whether they can do better at a game, whether they'll be able to be the banker at Monopoly, that's always really exciting at our house, or whether, you know, they can have more of a big picture. My 8-year-old wants to be a robot scientist, engineer. He's been obsessed with robots for about 5 years now. And so we've talked a lot about the advanced math that he'll need for that. And so that's kind of, you know, it's a long ways away, so it's not always really, really in his mind that this doing math today will help me when I'm 25, but certainly it can help.
All right, great, thanks, Jenny. So Jenny, do you have a daughter named Lindy?
I'm sorry, say that again?
You have a daughter named Lindy.
I do.
Okay, well, she has a question for you. She says, hi, Mom. So I was assuming that must have been your daughter. She wants to know if you have a list of the resources in your slideshow.
So many of them can be printed off of the games and things, visionacademypublishing.com. Or I have some things that I could send out. They're for sale on there. Many of them are listed on the handout if you download the handout for this program. And then most of everything else, I can't think of anything in my presentation today that is not in a previous audio library presentation. So you can go on the audio library and look up all the classes that I've taught. And you, even if you don't have a subscription or whatever, you can load the presentations and handouts for free. That's not a problem. So look through those. There's lists and lists of math resources on the audio library. So.
All right.
Or call your mom, Lindy.
Yes, Lindy, call Mom. Mom knows.
My oldest daughter is Lindy.
All right, Jenny, those are all the questions we have. This has been fabulous. We appreciate you taking the time, and we appreciate everyone being on and listening or viewing Jenny's wonderful presentation. So thank you everyone for joining us, and we will see you this evening at 6 p.m. Eastern and again next week.
Thank you, Lisa.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.